You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community culture, and everything in between. This week, we're going to talk about the Xbox Live price crisis. Naughty Dog's next game might be a new IP, and more games coming from Valve. This is episode number 37, and we are recording for the week of January 18th, 2021. My name is Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
You know, the other day I played from my wife the intro that I did the last time Kurabara was on, and I played the part where I'm like, I'm not Jared, but you can call me Nick. And my wife's like, you're such an asshole. Why would you say that? And I'm like, that's what Jared said. I'm playing off what Jared said. but I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I cannot complain, to be honest with you, even though I really haven't had a chance to play too much recently. I've been so busy with some other work around the network that I think the only game I've really been playing is GTFO, but that's like once or twice a week. And then I'll play Overwatch sometimes just to get a couple wins so I can do the event that just happened or get the skins that just happened. But other than that, I haven't been doing too much. So how about you?
I'm doing well. Been playing some more Final Fantasy with the 4-year-old. The one night I went downstairs and I played for a bit, and I got through like a whole town or whatever, and he hates the stuff where you know, like when you're in town, like buying potions and stuff, like he just wants to be out in the world killing stuff. And it's like, no, but this is where you like get the power to kill stuff. Like, you don't understand.
Right.
And, you know, so I went through and I did all that, and I got like way ahead of him because I got him out of whatever dungeon he was stuck in, and I got up to the next point. And then he came down, so I was like, okay, I'll start you from where I saved and you can skip all that. And it's like, no, I want to go back to the dungeon. I'm like, so I let him go back to the dungeon, and then he gets to the town and he just runs right through the town because he doesn't care. And he gets to the part where I saved, and I was like, okay, hold on a second. And now I can load my save that I already did that has all the stuff that I did while you were away, and now you can just pick up and go from there. So that might be how I'll have to play this with him, where I'll have to get ahead to a save point and then let him kind of catch back up, and then we can go from there. I'm basically going to have to play through the game twice. It's going to be crazy.
Well, the things you do for love, right, Nick?
The things I do for love for Final Fantasy, because I do love the game, so.
Oh, okay. It's a good game. Yeah. So, we're going to go ahead and hop into our topics. Before we do that, though, I would like to welcome any first-time listeners. Thank you for taking the time to check out the Mash Those Buttons show. And I'd also like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners, as well as give a very special thanks, a very big thanks to our supporters on Patreon and also our Twitch subscribers. And, you know, if you want to help support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. You get access to early access to some content and exclusive access to others. And if you want to follow us on Twitch and see when we're going live, just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/themashnetwork. And we'd love to have you join our community at mash.gg/discord. So if you were expecting this episode on Friday, so were we originally. Obviously we're a little late because this is going to be coming out on Monday instead of Friday, but when we were going through the news on Thursday, we're just like, we're sitting there like, our pre-show had to be like 90 minutes, and we're just like, what are we going to talk about, because it's not too much here. And yeah, we were like, you know what, it got late at that point. I was like, let's just record Monday. We're not record Monday, but record Sunday. And then like Friday, bam, 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 all this stuff happens. Like, yep, made the right call. made the right call. So yeah, bad show if it were to come out on Friday. Should be a pretty decent show today.
That show, if it had come out on Friday, would be a very different show based on the pre-show.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and hop into our topics here. First of all, let's talk about the Xbox Live price crisis. That's what I want to call it. Because on Friday, Microsoft released some information that they are increasing the live, increasing the price of Xbox Live. And when I first saw the headline, I was like, okay, what's going to be? An additional $5, an additional $10, what? And even I was like, if it's $10 more, like, I'm not going to whine about it, but I'm like, I don't see the point of, like, you know, I don't see why they would charge an additional $10, because it's not like they haven't made the service much better. You know, they haven't been adding features to the service and stuff like that. At this point, it feels like pretty much just maintenance for the services that you currently get. But when I read the price hike, it went from $60 to $120 a year. I was like, oh, this is not going to go well.
I think you may have insight that the people at Microsoft lacked.
Yeah, I was like, this is not going to go well. The one of the reasons Microsoft gave for the price increase was they said, you know, the price of Xbox Live hasn't been adjusted in some times. In some regions, it hasn't been adjusted in 10 years. I remember when Xbox Live used to be $50, you know, and then it went up to $60, and people kind of complained about that, but it was like, whatever. At least when it went from $50 to $60, there was a difference in service. New features have been added to the service. So it was like, okay, I got it. But nobody wants to pay more for a service, but okay, fine, fuck it. I get it, you know. But yeah, no, from 60 to 100, they doubled the price in one shot. That's not on us. That's on y'all, because Microsoft did not update the price over time. That's on you guys, not us, you know. And there was just massive backlash. There were lots of people saying that, oh, Microsoft was just trying to push Games Pass Ultimate, and that's why they kind of wanted to make Xbox Live seem undesirable. I don't think that was the case, because even with Xbox Live being $120, Games Pass Ultimate for a year is $180. So yeah, I mean, that it's still $60 more. So it's not that much more attractive. I mean, don't get me wrong, you do get more with Games Pass. You get a whole games library. You do get xCloud, you know, stuff like that. But there are also big complaints that free-to-play games required Xbox Live Gold. And I think people have been complaining about that for a while, but I guess I'll be the Microsoft shell this time. In Microsoft's defense, those free-to-play games still use the same services that regular games use for Xbox Live. So I understand them saying you need gold to play this, right?
Makes sense.
So yeah, I get it, but yeah. Well, 15 hours later, we'll see. A lot of tweets. A lot of people so-called defecting, like, get the fuck out of here. You were just going to pay the price, dude. You were. Because the honest truth is you play where your friends are. Nobody, like, if Xbox Live matters that much to you, nobody makes that decision in a vacuum. You don't. You play where your friends are. So right now, if you're paying for Xbox, if you are like a console gamer, right? So I'll take me for example. I have Xbox Live just because. I have it just because. Like, I honestly, if I shut off Xbox Live, it would not impact me. You know, I keep it up just in case one of my friends want to play on the Xbox, but I have not touched my Xbox. No, that's a lie. I haven't played my Xbox in over a year. The only reason I touch it is because sometimes it comes on by itself. And I have to turn it off. Okay. But yeah, if you are a console gamer and you play Xbox a lot, I imagine that means online a lot. A lot of your friends play Xbox, and you're not just going to drop it. Like, I'm going to go play on PlayStation now. You know, you're not going to do that.
I could see a group, you know, talking in Discord being like, this is bullshit. And, you know, like four or five people being like, yeah, let's all just go to PlayStation together. Assuming they have the means to do that, assuming they presumably already have a PlayStation, that kind of stuff. Like, you're not just
right
at this point. If you're in the Xbox system and you don't have a PlayStation, yeah, jumping to be like, yeah, we're going to PlayStation 4 and we'll do that, like, that probably not happening. But if you're going to sit there and say like, oh, well, I'm not going to play Xbox Live anymore. I'm assuming you have a PlayStation that you're just gonna be like, yeah, I'll go over there and your friends will go with you. Or at least that's the, you know, that would be at least what I would think you're thinking, because otherwise you're right. Like you're not, yeah, you're going to be the only guy sitting over there playing your PlayStation online by yourself while all your friends are still paying, you know, twice as much for Xbox Live. That doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah, that's like people I know who swore like, oh, I'm done with Destiny and I'm just going to go play Warframe now. And they go play Warframe for a little bit and nobody goes and plays with them. And then they come back to Destiny, you know. Destiny's like prison. You always come back. But yeah, so Microsoft, after like lots of anger later and people saying they were going to defect, you know, Phil Spencer came back and says, you know, we messed up today and you were right to let us know. Connecting with players and friends is a vital part of gaming, and we fail to meet the expectations of players who count on it every day. As a result, we have decided not to change the Xbox Live Gold pricing. Additionally, and I'm not sure if he says this in the same statement, but it did come out that free-to-play games will no longer need Xbox Live Gold. And this is why Phil Spencer is a great head of Xbox. Because if it was somebody else, you know, somebody not as receptive to gamers, you know, like the people who were around at the launch of the Xbox One, so, you know, like those people were not very responsive to what gamers were saying, you know, I don't think we would have saw an about face here.
Well, see, that's what I'm actually going to go against you and say, I think the Phil Spencer's got a lot of egg on his face here because he shouldn't have approved the price hike in the first place. like, don't get me wrong, like making the about face and going a step beyond was like, that was the right call at that point. But like somebody should have been in that room, and like it's Phil's room. So ultimately it comes down to him, but somebody should have been screaming like, hey, I don't see how this goes over well. And so
true.
If anything, like Microsoft looks stupid because they should have been ready for the impact and been like, we've made this decision, tough, deal with it. Or they should have like known what the impact would be and then not made that decision first. The only way that Microsoft comes out looking good is if you assume that the plan all along was to make gold for, to make gold not required for free to play games. And so they were like, well, how can we announce this in a way that's going to draw a lot of impact? I know, let's do a fake price hike and then walk it back and go one step further. And everybody's like, oh, thank you, Microsoft. That's awesome. Which, no, that's a terrible idea. Why would you do that?
That's why I don't think they did that.
I don't think so either. So they just look like I get that they want to raise the price. And I get that they may very well believe internally that double the price is more than reasonable. I think you can make that argument, but you don't like they are people. They are consumers in their own right. Like, how would they feel if like a product that they were, you know, a regular consumer of suddenly just doubled its price? Even if you're going from something that's like $1 to $2, like, you know, still, the dollar amount isn't important. It's the whoa, that's twice as much as it used to cost. What? Like, no, it's like you know, look at what Netflix does, and Microsoft is perfectly fine to point out, well, we haven't done this in 10 years or whatever. You know, Netflix, every few years, they're like, here, hey, you know, we're just going to take another dollar or two. Just give us another dollar or two.
Well, that's fine. The way it should have been happening. Right, like the price, and you know what, part of the problem and why they could not raise the price over the last 10 years is because they have been in damage control mode since 2013. They have, and they couldn't raise the price of anything. They raised the price of Xbox Live $5 on a console that is clearly not selling games the way the PlayStation is and doesn't have the exclusives the PlayStation does. Why are you increasing the price of Xbox Live? I mean, from a technical perspective, Xbox Live is superior to PSN. It is. Mm-hmm. There's no argument. Xbox Live is better than PSN. It is way better than Nintendo, whatever the fuck they call it. Is it Nintendo Online? Or
Nintendo
something?
Is a can on a string, and you put the can up to your Switch and then it communicates.
Yeah, like, but yeah, I mean, yeah, but the PlayStation Network and PlayStation Plus is still part of the PSN subscription, right? Or is it PlayStation Plus is the PSN subscription that you got to pay for?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is. I've been paying for it for so long. I'm just like, I don't know. They get my money. Like, yeah, that's that. But, you know, they don't really you know, like besides that, like, I mean, I guess maybe if you're not a technical person, you don't really understand the differences, or if you don't have both, you don't understand differences. Like, right. If you're just a PlayStation player and you play on PSN all the time, you've never played on Xbox Live, I don't think you'll see the differences on Xbox Live. You know, it is a better experience for online play, but not $120 worth of it, to be honest with you. Like I said, I think a general price hikes over time would have been better, but I mean, it was part of the situation that they were in, just probably wouldn't allow it. And now that they have built up a lot of their credibility back so far, I think they're like, okay, this is the time to increase price. But they probably should have had a plan, like, okay, it's 2020 now. By 2025, we want it to be this price.
Right.
You know, and they should have raised it over time.
Or you do something like where you throw a few free games in there, you know, yeah. Like, you know, to mitigate that sticker shock, because this is such a boneheaded move that I am the video games public defender bashing Microsoft, and I'm also the Microsoft shill bashing Microsoft. So they have cut me to the core in two ways, and it's I have to think that there's I want to be in that room. I want to have been in that room when the decision was made, because I would be like that ghost, like in one of those movies, like when you see people doing something stupid, you're screaming like, no, don't do that. And like, they wouldn't hear you because
right,
they just go and do, you know, and it's like, I don't think anybody understands this. I think the people that are saying that they wanted to make this, you know, they wanted to make this discomparable to the Games Pass so that they could push games. That I don't like, that's the most logical rationale you can come up with. And I don't, and as you said, that doesn't even make that much sense.
I wonder how this would have affected their subsidy program, where like the one where you pay $35 a month and you get Games Pass Ultimate, which comes with Xbox Live and a brand new Xbox Series X.
I don't think it would have affected it at all, because if you're already getting Games Pass Live, like that price didn't change. And I think that's all factored in.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if that's the case, and maybe, I don't know, man, maybe that was what they were thinking. That, okay, you might as well go get an Xbox Series X and pay $35 a month on the subsidy program, because it's at that point, that is the absolute best deal, especially because it's a two-year subsidy program, which, if we're right, like with what we've been saying in previous episodes, they might have a brand new Xbox for you to get an Xbox upgrade in 2 years, maybe 3 years, and that might work out. I mean, we're doing a lot of speculating here, but maybe that's what they did. They looked at all the various options people had to get Xbox Live Gold and be like, I mean, I guess if you want classic Xbox Live Gold, you can pay this much, but it's just better in these programs. But people don't want to change. People are stubborn, you know?
Well, the thing is too, like, if that was their goal, was to drive people off of Xbox Live to other services, then they would have stuck to the price. Clearly that wasn't their goal, because it's baffling. It's just baffling. And for a company that since 2013 has done a very good job. I mean, we praise Phil Spencer on a regular basis here. We think he's done a very good job.
Since 2015,
because
2015. I'm pretty sure that's when Phil came on board.
That's when the ship was actually ready. The ship was going in the wrong direction in 2013. 2015 is when it absolutely turned around. But since it's for his tenure, he's done a very good job. And as you pointed out, the about face and the no requirement for the free games, that's the right move in this case. Like, once Spencer realized they made a mistake, he did the correct thing. But it's just, they made the mistake in the first place, and it's just baffling.
Right. So let's go ahead and move into our next topic, which is Valve, Capcom, and Bethesda have been fined $9.5 million for geo-blocking PC games. This is in the EU. So the EU has fined Valve and five publishers a total of 7.8 million euros. That's that's 9.5 million US dollars over their practice of geo-blocking PC game sales on Steam. This basically means forcing users in a country, let's say Germany, to only pay the German price for the game instead of letting them buy a cheaper version of the same game from a different European country. Geo-blocking breaches EU antitrust rules, and so the five publishers cited, Bandai, Namco, Capcom, Focus Home, Koch Media, and ZeniMax, which is Bethesda, were fined 6.2 million euros. As the owners and operators of Steam, Valve, who chose not to cooperate with the commission, they were fined 1.6 million euros. So I wonder if, you know, if Microsoft bought Bethesda, and now this comes out, I'd be like, you son of a bitch.
Well, that 6.2 million, that's total, right?
So that's right. Yeah. Yeah. But nobody likes losing $1 million, you know. Oh. Even though Microsoft, like, just completely, like, when the back in like 2013, 2014, actually, I think it was 2012 and 2013, I think the Xbox division lost $2 billion each that year. And Microsoft was just like, yeah, that sucks. But we made like $6 or $8 billion from Windows Server and some shit like that. So it balances out, right?
Wait, so you're saying that Microsoft purchased Bethesda, a good, for a set amount of money, and then out of nowhere they found out the price for that good was suddenly going up that they had no control over, and they were upset about that?
Well, I don't think they were upset about it. I'm just saying, like, that would have been a nice surprise. Well, don't get me wrong.
They don't like surprise price hikes, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure during their discovery, they found out all this stuff. That's what those guys' jobs are, right?
Right.
So, yeah, during the discovery, I'm pretty sure they found all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately, this is a slap on the wrist. I think the fines, I read somewhere else that the fines will increase if they do not take action, you know, so, and yeah, I mean, I don't know how negatively this would affect developers. I mean, ultimately they are, you know, to be clear, they're all businesses, right? So of course they want the most money they could possibly get from, you know, their games, and the value of money is different depending on the country. But, you know, with the way the EU works, like, if one country has the lowest price and everybody buys it from that country, they're not really losing money, right? I mean, unless technically speaking, I'm not a finance person, right? When they're doing their projections, they're like, okay, well, this game is going to make this much money because we're probably going to get this many sales in the US and this many sales in Germany and this many sales in Brazil and this many sales here and this many sales there. But when it comes to the EU, they can't really do that because they might want to assume whichever country has the lowest price, that's the country everybody's going to buy it from.
Well, I would think like they would have people who are familiar with how pricing works in the EU, and they would just know, like, okay, we should just set one price for the entire EU. That's why they have the euro even. So it's like, it's a common currency across all the countries, and, you know, just handle them as one giant block. And I don't know why. I'm sure there's probably reasons why they don't, why they have to set different prices in different regions and whatnot. This seems like somebody, and clearly it's not like a lone person. There's a bunch of people that did a bunch of different companies who all just didn't understand the law or didn't care.
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, it's not like the EU is all pro consumer, right? Like, it's like they do want businesses to make money. So, you know, I think that it probably leans more on the side of these businesses just trying to squeeze as much money as they can, you know, on the different consumers. And that's why the EU was like, no, you can't really do it. Cause like I said, they're not really losing any money. If you're going to sell it for a certain amount in a certain country, because the cost of living is that low, then, I mean, that's what the price is. Like, you're not losing, you're still making a profit off of the game at the price that you're setting it, you know. But if they set the price too high over across the board, then you'll, like some countries, you'll be, you know, locking them out, because the people won't be able to afford the game, or it leads to more piracy. So, yeah, so they're not really losing anything there. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen, because, like you know, they said that Valve here was not cooperating with the commission. So that 1.6 million is nothing to Valve. I wonder if that if they can keep increasing the fine, or Valve is talking with the publishers to see how they want to handle it, you know, what's going to happen there.
So. Is there anyone at Valve that even is responsible for this? Like, like is it just like they sent the email and it went into like support at Valve or whatever, and nobody's just like, I'm not taking that.
They just got a letter and it's just sitting there on somebody's desk under a pile of other letters. Like, right. Oh yeah, I should have gave this to Gabe, huh?
And even then, it depends, because they move their desks around all the time. So, it, like, they could have just moved around the office a desk to desk and whatnot, and who knows?
Oh, man. Somebody finds it when they're moving out of their place. Like, oh, yeah, I meant to take this back to the office. Yeah. For those who don't know, Valve has a very loose structure. They have a very loose, like, management structure and stuff like that. I mean, it's probably a great place to fucking work, but goddamn, they're frustrating to deal with. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
I'm pretty sure here at Mash Those Buttons, we have a tighter management structure.
Oh man, so
we have a tighter management structure. They have all the money.
Yeah,
they
yeah, that's awesome how that works. Yeah, let's move into and talk about let's do our weekly Cyberpunk 2077 talk. That's not Night City stories. Because some additional information came out about Cyberpunk 2077. Actually, Jason Schreier, yes, from Bloomberg, who used to be Jason Schreier from Kotaku. The difference now is that his articles are paywalled. And no, not so. Other games, and I've never seen this before, but the other games outlets that I saw covering this are like, yeah, the original article is on Bloomberg, but you got to pay to see it. So here's what it was about. I'm like, whoa. I was like, I wonder how that works. That's... because the Bloomberg has no recourse. They can't say, oh, this is proprietary IP. Like, no, it's fucking news, dude.
Yeah.
it's fucking news. So I don't know. I think we're going to see the end of the paywall sometime in the next 5 years, but I shudder to think what's coming next. Oh. I don't know. But yeah, so Jason Schreier, you know, he reported on he got some inside information about the, you know, the internal workings during Cyberpunk 2077, stuff like that. You know, CD Projekt management dismissed concerns that Cyberpunk was too complex to run on last gen hardware. I know there's been a lot of talk about that, like, oh, the game's been in development for 9 years, how could it not run on next gen hardware? But then it also came out that full development of the game didn't really start until 2016, which I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes more sense. So it almost feels like they were prototyping the game from what, like 2011 up into 2016. So actually they only spent about 4 years in full development of the game. I mean, technically, I mean, the development lasted longer, let's say 5 years, 6 years at the most, but not 9 years. I mean, years.
If you factor in crunch, that's about 9 years in 4 years time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, 4 years is only one additional year that they have that it takes to make a Call of Duty game. If you look at it like that. But it makes more sense that once they got into full development in 2016, you know, they probably didn't really have a working unit, not a working unit, but a full working game for, you know, last gen hardware. And also they said in 2018 that the demo was completely fake for the game, for the demo that was shown at E3 2018, meaning it was just created for E3, and what they were working on in the office was not the same thing. It was what they hoped for, essentially. It was what they hoped to get to, but that never made it in. And some of the developers felt that the demo was just a waste of time, like they should have been working on Cyberpunk 2016, because the demos like still require time. And don't get me wrong, I think you see demos often at E3 that aren't really part of the game. Like, so the demo you saw, I think the original God of War demo they showed at E3, that wasn't, I don't want to say it wasn't part of the game. I'm trying to remember which parts of it were in the game. I think there were some parts of it in the game, but that demo had to be created independently from the actual game itself, and then they had to make the rest of the game. Like, you should watch who was it, Noclip made a video, like a dev documentary on God of War, and a good chunk of the dev documentary is them just making that demo. And then once it was done and it went well at E3, they're like, okay, now we got to make the rest of the game. You know? Well, and it's just like, wow.
Well, part of the problem is that, like, for a game to be playable, you know, there's so many elements that you have to bring in that it's not like, oh, we're going to work on level one, and then as soon as level one is done complete and we can put it out, then we're going to work on level two. Like, no, like, the game might very well be functional. Development might be going fine, but you don't have anything that's, like, presentable until very late in the process. So if you want to put out a demo early on, you're going to need to kind of basically treat it like a separate project and work on it, make sure all the resources are there. And I'm sure even then there's going to be stuff missing. But, like, if you want to get it to a point that you feel comfortable presenting this to a community and they're not going to crap on it, like, this isn't a playable game, what the hell? Like, you're right. You're going to have to treat that like a separate project.
I wonder if Aliens Colonial Marines ruined this for everybody. So the thing that I always said about Aliens Colonial Marines, because people will shout on it, like, you know, even like, what is his name? Jim Sterling made a whole video comparing Aliens Colonial Marines, the actual game, to the video they showed at E3. But my argument was, they clearly stated that that was a target video. It was clearly stated that was a target video. You're not, unless they 100% got it perfect, unless they hit all of their targets, that wasn't going to be the same either way. But you don't got to fight back with me, Nick. He's getting ready to fire back right now.
I'm just wincing.
It wasn't close enough. That's not the direction I'm going in here, folks. Yeah. It definitely was not close enough. Also, another game that had a great target video and then got completely canceled was Rainbow Six Siege. Rainbow Six Siege was supposed to be called Rainbow Six Patriots, and it had an excellent target video. I was so excited. And then eventually they just figured out that they couldn't do it. You know, it would have been super timely too. If you didn't see it, it was about, it happened after the financial collapse, like in 2008, like the housing bubble. And it starts with, a guy, he's a banker, and he gets his house invaded by patriots, and they take him out. And the reason they don't take him out, like kill him, they pull him out of his house because he was a banker. That was one of the reasons why the housing market crashed. And they attach some, you start the game from the perspective of the terrorists, and they strap some bombs onto this guy and you fight on this bridge. And then it switches to the perspective of the Rainbow Team. And like, I think it's like the Brooklyn Bridge, like you're rappelling down one of the pillars of the Brooklyn Bridge and you're fighting your way up to it. And, you get to the guy, they're trying to defuse the bomb. And one of the guys like, we ain't got time. And they just flip him over the bridge and he falls into the water and blows up.
What?
I was like, this is going to be awesome.
Wow.
That was the demo. Yeah, you can probably find it on YouTube if you look for Rainbow Six Patriots.
But that's funny because if you think about it, then, you know, Ubisoft goes on to start making that game and then they're like, shit, we ain't got time. And then they just throw the game off the bridge and it blows up in the water.
Yeah, lucky for them, Rainbow Six Siege actually. Well, I mean, they lucked out Rainbow Six Siege. Not actually, they lucked out because Rainbow Six Siege was a great game, but it also hit at the right time when everybody's looking for esports titles. And this is our esports title. So, but yeah, I mean, things got cut from the game. Like there was supposed to be some wall running, flying cars. There were supposed to be ambushes. Like you would just get ambushed in the game. And, even some like perching where if you had like the Mantis Blades, you could perch on a high, you know, roof or something like that. All got cut during development. And they even said that the police system was done at the very last minute. Which is true. Like, it doesn't fucking matter, man. I could just, like, start shooting people on the streets and then just hop in a car and you just drive past the police and it's like they give up. It's so lackluster. It's not even funny. So, I think what one thing they said in the article, I can't tell for sure because obviously I can't read it because of the paywall, but what they said was that Jason Schreier said that they were trying to make a GTA type of game, but with a fraction of Rockstar staff. That's what essentially what they were trying to do, but in first person. And it feels like it. They just didn't do it. they weren't able to hit that mark. And I think this article definitely shines more light onto why they weren't able to hit the mark. They definitely, the biggest problem here is marketing, man. Marketing. Like, they definitely overpromised on the game. And I still think that if this game came out in 2018, it would have been received much better. Much better. 2016, because after 2018, after God of War comes out and it has a chance to like really sit with everybody and marinate, and you realize games will never be the same again, you know, and then you get The Last of Us Part Two last year, like games will never be the same again, you know, and then this finally comes out after the fact. It's like, oh, like, no, this is 2 years too late.
If CD Projekt Red releases this in 2018, there's no PS5 or Xbox
to run it properly.
Xbox Series X to run it. Exactly. So it's only on the last gen and it's terrible. So no, actually they're hurt even worse.
Yeah. So I'm just talking about the style of game it is. Like let's imagine for a second that the game comes out and it's perfect, right? It's completely perfect. It runs the way it's supposed to. Even if the game's running perfectly, the systems aren't outdated. I mean, wrong. It's still a fun game to play. I still enjoy playing the game, but it's not shocking. It doesn't feel like, oh, this is the next level of RPG. Like, no, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like, okay, this is a cool game. This is a good game, but not based off of what the marketing wanted you to think. Like, you've never played an RPG like this. Yes, I have.
Well, you're comparing it to Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in what, like 2011?
Yeah, but it did. No. Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in 2013, but this would have felt like a step up to that. That's like, it would have felt, if it was running properly.
Okay, so they did at least like advance the genre, as it were, a little bit. Maybe not as much as gaming overall has advanced in that time, but it's not like they're coming out with like, oh, this is our response to Grand Theft Auto, and we're just going to meet it. Like, they did at least surpass it in some regards.
Absolutely. So one of the things that kind of not irks me, but one of the things that I notice a lot after playing a game like God of War is the fact that while you're traveling, there's a lot of travel with the game in some cases, but it's quiet. You know, you play God of War while you're traveling from place to place. At first, it's Kratos. He's talking. He's telling stories to Atreus, and it's relaying a ton of information in the game. You know, after you get Mimir, he's talking. He's relaying a ton of information about the world in the game. Cyberpunk has this incredibly deep lore, right? So if you listen to the last Night City stories, 2/3 of that episode is us just going over the history of Arasaka that's outside of the game. 2/3. So 40 minutes of that show is that. But this is just a ton of information that's not in the game that you have to go outside the game to get. I don't understand why there's no radio station there to deliver that. If you had a radio station, that was like an NPR in the game that players could listen to as they're driving around or something like that, that would have been incredible. That would have been your going from place to place, listening to, you know, the world of Cyberpunk, and, you know, this thing happened today, and this reminds of us, and this happened, or this is the anniversary of this thing, and blah, 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 blah. Like, no, they didn't do any of that. So they just feel like there's a lot of lessons that were learned, in my opinion, from like 2017 and up that are not in the game, you know, that would have enhanced the game greatly, but it does, I want to say outdated. But the game just doesn't feel as new as it should for a game coming out at the ass end of 2020. You know? Still love it. Listen to Night City Stories. It's great. Yeah. But the studio lead at CD Projekt Red, Adam Badowski, I think I said that correct, says the information that staff didn't want to release in 2020 did not represent the full staff. That's what he says. So he's saying only about 20 people or so were interviewed, and that doesn't represent what the full staff says. But then again, and I raise you this one, Adam, a lot of the staff probably wanted the game to release just because they were tired of crunching. So did you think about that one, big guy? You know? Let's go ahead and move on to our next topic, which is Resident Evil Village. Just some basic information came out, like it's going to be available on May 7th, 2021. It's going to be available on current and last gen. I say that with a little like, because I'm like, yeah, see, at this point, I want games. I want certain games to play just on the PlayStation 5. I love having the backward compatibility for the PlayStation 5 because, you know, I think that means that I don't have to rush and play games on my PlayStation 4, right? I can take my games that I haven't played on my PlayStation 4, take them to the PlayStation 5. But for games in 2021, I kind of wanted them to be next gen because making it so that the gameplay is on both means that you are holding the game back. This is why I really, really hope God of War is not available on PS4. Come on, y'all. Please. No God of War for PS4. Do not hold back for God of War. All right. Horizon Zero Dawn 2, no PS4. I'm gonna make a sign, put that shit on Twitter.
I thought they already said it was gonna be on PS4.
I hope not. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that. I hope not though. Because I honestly just want those games to focus on the next gen hardware. And that's it.
Yes, but at the same time, I think one of the things that made God of War especially such a great game is that it came out late enough in the PS4 cycle that they had mastered development on that console. And so to have expectations that like, oh, we're just going to put it on the PS5 and like, yeah, they'll have access to the hardware and be able to push that. At the same time though, like I'd almost want to say they should be waiting like another 2 or 3 years until they've really mastered that hardware to put something out. There's still going to be limitations.
Well, I think going from PS4 to PS5 isn't as difficult as, let's say, going from PS3 to PS4 because the CPU architecture is still similar.
Yes.
But, you know, God of War, even coming out on PS4 2018, it did not have the best experience unless you were playing on a PS4 Pro. Like, that was the first PS4 game I played that really needed a PS4 Pro. Like, because I actually started playing the game on PS4, then my PS4 broke, or more specifically, the Bluetooth like receiver inside the PS4 broke. And I had to get a new PlayStation, so I got a PS4 Pro. And when I started playing God of War after that, I'm like, oh, this is so much better. Because the graphics didn't look that great. The frame rate wasn't that great. The frame rate dropped even more when you were fighting. But once I got the PS4 Pro, that's when I really started diving into the game. So yeah, like even like on the regular PS4 before, like it just wasn't that great. I can only imagine, because when they say it's available on PS4, they mean both the PlayStation 4 and the PS4 Pro. And that means they have to make sure that it plays well enough on both of those consoles. And that's what I'm worried about. I want it to be all PS5 hardware, you know. But back to Resident Evil. So I think they showed like another trailer. The game looks interesting. So I think it's cool. It still has, what's his name? Oh God, I can't remember the name of the protagonist. Is it
Leon?
No, it's not Leon. Ethan. Ethan's his name. Ethan Winters. That was the protagonist from Resident Evil 7. He is the protagonist of Resident Evil 8 or Village, as it's named. He will be back. PlayStation 5 owners can download the demo called Maiden. So all five of you that have a PlayStation 5, you guys can play that. I mean, that right now, I think that's mainly one of the only reasons why it's important that this game or some games have the backward compatibility is the fact that there's just the amount of PS5s and PS5s out there just isn't that much. Don't get me wrong, I know millions of people have them, but that's not the install base that they want.
No.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, PS4 owners, you will not be able to play the demo, but PS5 owners can. So this one confused me a bit. Releasing with the game will be a competitive multiplayer called Resident Evil Reverse, which is an arena-style shooter, and it'll also have AI monsters like Hunter Gamma from RE3 and Molded from RE7. It's also, I don't think it uses the Resident Evil engine. I forget what it's called. I forget what the Resident Evil engine is called, the one they use for 7. It looks good. And also, when they showed the preview for this game or the trailers for this game, it looked fucking phenomenal, you know. And yeah, they they're putting out this arena shooter. It's cel shaded, and I'm just like, why? This is like, who asked for this? It's free. So they said it's free when you buy Resident Evil's Village, but does that mean they're going to try to charge people for it if they just want to play it? Because who asked for this? Like,
it's a nice perk if you're buying Village that you have access to this arena shooter you can check out. But yeah, that's not, I don't know. I mean, Resident Evil has changed a lot over the years. I mean, you know, one of the benefits of the remakes the last few years is to be able to go back and look at the early games in the franchise. But like, nobody, like, I've never really looked at the combat in Resident Evil and thought, this deserves to be a multiplayer game. Like, this deserves an arena shooter. It's not.
One of the funny things that I noticed when I watched the video for the arena shooter is that the whoever was playing in the demo for the arena shooter, like, trailer, missed every shot. Every fucking shot. Like, they're shooting at somebody and I see the bullets hitting the walls behind them. I'm like, this does not look entertaining at all.
Did they miss, or were they intentionally trying to show you the bullet wall physics?
Oh man, Games Industry Public Defender in full action now. Catch that? He is back. You catch that, people? You catch that? So, and people are freaking out over the main character or the main villain antagonist, which is a giant vampire lady and her daughters. But like, she's a giant. She's an absolute giant. So, which is. Looks kind of funny. Like, I don't think you realize how big she is until you see her come through this door one time and her hat is the size of the entire door, like doorway. So it should be good. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm not a massive Resident Evil fan. I'm just a fan of good games. You know what I'm saying? So I did know, like, one of the things that it did give me more vibes of like the original Resident Evil. Cause like, you're back in like a mansion, you know, type setting, not just like in this decrepit like house. And I think that's kind of like what they were going for as well. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and move on to our next topic, which is Vicarious Visions is being merged into Blizzard. So Vicarious Visions, you might know them recently from their work on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 Plus 2 and Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. Those are both great remakes. And they did a great job reviving those trilogies, and especially in the case of Crash Bandicoot, because I do think having that Insane Trilogy, it kicked up a lot of buzz for Crash 4.
Yes.
In my opinion, it kicked up a lot of buzz for Crash 4. And their reward for reviving two dead series, essentially, is being merged into Blizzard to work on some Blizzard shit. Like, not even a new IP so far. But just to kind of do support work. So I'll just read what the quote is here. It says, after collaborating with Vicarious Visions for some time and developing a great relationship, Blizzard realized there was an opportunity for Vicarious Visions to provide long-term support. A representative explained to us, they declined to specify what the team had been working on at Blizzard or how long. So, additionally, as part of the move, Vicarious Visions studio head Jen O'Neill has been promoted to Blizzard Executive Vice President of Development, where she joins the company's leadership team and will report directly to Blizzard President J. Allen Brack. That is actually from gamesindustry.biz. So, yeah, like, they're going to provide long-term support on Blizzard games. And that's really all we really know about it. It's like, well, thanks, guys. You did great on these series.
Well, Jason Schreier, once again, stepping in here with all the relevant information, he did tweet out that Vicarious Visions has been working on a Diablo 2 remake, which there's been rumors of a Diablo 2 remake circling in the ether for a while. Nothing's been confirmed, and it's one of those things that we keep expecting to see at BlizzCon, or even people were thinking we'd probably see something at BlizzCon Line. If anything, this sort of almost cements that we'll probably see something about this at BlizzCon Line in about a month. In addition to this, though, Team One, which I think was formerly the StarCraft team and then went on to work on Heroes of the Storm and then had kind of become the Classic team insofar as they were maintaining a lot of the franchises that were no longer in active production, like StarCraft at this point. They were dismantled last fall, and it seems that the Vicarious Visions. I guess Team One was working on the Diablo 2 remake, and so since that team was dismantled, it was given first the remake was given to the Team Three, which is working, which is the Diablo team. So they're working on Diablo 4. They were also overseeing the remake, and now they're working with Vicarious Visions on the product. And yeah, I guess at one point Team One and the Classic team were two separate entities, but then once Team One finished with StarCraft, then they kind of merged together into one team, and they're all gone now. So there's been some, I guess, changes here within Blizzard, and it's easy to say like, oh, this is all Activision, like, you know, twisting the screws or whatever. It's just as likely that this is sort of Brack, you know, starting to put his imprint on the place, as it were. I know, like, especially, you know, StarCraft was Morheim's baby. And to see, you know, he's been gone now for a few years. And so this is when you might start to see some decisions from Brack really, really take place, that he's no longer, you know, he's finally getting out of whatever he had inherited and actually starting to put his, you know, mold the company as he sees necessary. So in that regard, this is just, normal business maneuvering. It is a bit odd to see a whole team imported, but Blizzard was saying for a while that, I mean, going back to their, when they laid off the 800 people, I think right after Brack took over, back around, I think 2018, they were saying that they laid off all these people because, well, I shouldn't say it was just Blizzard, it was Activision Blizzard as a whole laid off 800 people. But Blizzard was saying like, we need more developers. We need, we need to modify our headcount so that we can put out the games that we want to put out. And so they laid off all these people with the expectation they would be bringing in a swath of developers here. And this gives them an infusion of development talent. Even in their last quarterly report, if not the last one, the one before, they were saying that they still need to hire more developers. So this could just be Activision responding and saying, you need more developers and you're not getting them quick enough here. We're just going to take these guys that we've got and give them to you. And we know that they're good and you'll find a way to use them. So we'll see how the actual merging of talent goes. But this is just one of those things where on the surface, it kind of feels weird and not great. And I don't know if it's anything like we need to be worried about. I know, the Blizzard of the past is long gone. And what we're seeing, it's still morphing into something new. We'll see how BlizzCon line goes. I mean, that in and of itself is going to be a radical experience, but this is just another, this feels like another opportunity for people to just kind of crap on Activision. I think they'll take it.
Well, I mean, I it's funny cause you kind of came from it from a Blizzard perspective and how does it affect Blizzard? I don't care. Fuck Blizzard. I don't care how does it affect Blizzard. Blizzard's going to be fine. My thing about it though is like, usually what we see from Activision in the past is they'll have a studio. The studio will do support, right, for a larger studio, but for a main studio like Raven Software and Sledgehammer were doing support for Call of Duty with Infinity Ward and, you know, Treyarch and stuff like that. But then eventually Ravensoft got to make their own Call of Duty. Eventually Sledgehammer got to make their own Call of Duty. So it's like you do support first, then your studio, once you got some games under your belt and the experience under your belt, then they move you into making, you know, being the lead on games, which I'm pretty sure as a game developer, that's what you want. You want that type of upward movement. Now, I could be wrong. I don't work in the games industry. Game developers may be like, fuck it, man, I just want a job. Like, you know, that's what could be going on. But I imagine that's kind of what you want as a studio. But in this case, it's like they rebooted, you know, both of those not rebooted, but brought both of those franchises back to life. One that Activision just ran into the fucking ground, you know, and did a great job of it. And it's like, oh, you did a great job there. But instead of getting that next level of like, okay, fine, we have this IP, we want to develop it. What kind of IP are you thinking about doing? It's like, okay, now go work under Blizzard's umbrella. You know, that's what it kind of feels like to me. Not saying it's bad. I'm not trying to shit on Activision here. I expected to see what else Vicarious Visions could really do. And I'm not really going to get a chance to see that because they're just going to be making another game for Blizzard at this point, you know, like another remake.
it may well be that, you know, Activision kind of went to them and said, like, what vision do you have? You know, no pun intended. Like, you know, where do you want to go? And they could have said, like, we're having a great time with Diablo and we want to really get our hands into that. And we've enjoyed what our partnership with Blizzard, and we see an opportunity here. And this could just be a natural outcropping of that. I mean, you're right. You know, most people, you know, would think like there's a certain ascension for a studio to go through. And it may just be that it may not be like this isn't anybody forcing anything. This may have just been the natural, you know, direction that Vicarious Visions was going to go. I mean, we'll never know because we aren't paying to get past Jason Schreier's paywall, but I don't know. This is, like I said, this feels like something that's like, this feels like something wrong. And I don't necessarily think it is. It's just unusual.
Right. Right. So I guess we'll see what comes from that. Let's go ahead and move on to our next topic, though, which is there are rumors that there's a new Knights of the Old Republic game in development, but it is outside of EA, which means that it is not being done by BioWare, which, I mean, you can call me an alarmist, but to me, that's not a good idea. Like, it's not a good idea because Knights of the Republic, yes, it is a Star Wars game, but it is a BioWare game. It's a BioWare game. Like, Knights of the Old Republic is really, in my opinion, what shaped Jade Empire, and it shaped, you know, Mass Effect.
Mass Effect to me, the first one felt like what kind of like what they wanted to do with the third Knights of the Old Republic, and then they just kind of like reworked the whole idea. But I mean, if you think of the N7s, if you think of them as like Jedi, then like, it kind of all fits together in an odd way. The problem is like who at BioWare that worked on Knights of the Old Republic is still there, and I'm not counting the Old Republic MMO. Like, I'm right. Counting like the main staff. I mean, we've seen them. We've it's been long enough that we've seen some of the people leave, come back, and leave again.
Right, this is true, and it also kind of shows to me like that Lucasfilm is just not happy with how EA has handled that exclusive license. Like, they're not. You know, I can understand taking new IP and, okay, Ubisoft, let's see what you can do with this open world Star Wars game. Because clearly, EA, you don't know how to do shit with open world, you know. But at the same time, it's like you're going to straight up take, you know, the IP that BioWare put together, you know, that they made. Because when you play Knights of the Old Republic, you are expecting a certain type of game. And, you know, you're going to have somebody else try to do that. You know, I mean, even I'm sorry, but people say Knights of the Old Republic 2 was as good as the first one. I just disagree. I'm sorry.
If it had a proper ending. you want to say that BioWare, you know, hasn't worked on a game since Knights of the Old Republic 2. That's not true. BioWare hasn't worked on a Knights of the Old Republic game since like midway through Knights of the Old Republic 2 because they stopped working on it.
I thought Obsidian made Knights of the Old
Republic. That's right. It was 2. Obsidian.
Yeah, it was Obsidian.
But the game has no ending. My point stands.
But yeah, that's the thing about it. Like, you know, for them to take that away from BioWare. And then again, let's be clear, though. EA has had decades at this point to make another Knights of the Old Republic game. They made the MMO. The MMO, I mean, I guess it's doing well enough because it's still running. But it didn't do what they wanted it to do. You know, I mean, the MMO has better lightsaber battles than the new movies. I'll tell you that much.
Yes.
You know, it has great scenarios and great stories, but it just isn't. I know people who play it, but it's not what they want it to be. So EA's had more. I don't feel bad for EA here. That's all I'm saying. Because EA has had more than enough time, more than enough opportunity to pump out more Star Wars content. And I can understand why Lucasfilm is not pleased with how they've handled that license, because we like what have we gotten in terms of Star Wars content? We've gotten more. The most recently, we got a Battlefront and Battlefront 2 that was pretty good. Battlefront 2, the single player, was good. Then you have Jedi Fallen Order, of course, and you had Star Wars Squadrons. But with all the time they had these Star Wars licenses, and they weren't really doing anything with it. I think they made like a mobile game too, but. Yeah, EA just kind of squandered that, you know? So, yeah, like, they just must be super pissed. Not pissed at him, but just kind of like, yeah, we're... I wonder if eventually they won't have EA making any of their games. Like, if Ubisoft can make this open world game well enough, they may... first of all, I doubt they go into an exclusivity agreement with anybody else. at this
point.
I think they're just going to try to find the best developer for the job.
Well, I could imagine like EA like showing up and being like, look, like we've got the exclusivity agreement with the NFL. And like, you know, right. I'm like, okay, like the NFL is a big thing. Like they make a lot of money there, but like the way you monetize the NFL is completely different than how you monetize Star Wars.
Right.
And yeah, to for Lucasfilm to limit themselves in that regard. And don't get me wrong, like EA does have a ton of developers. And so like, yeah, you can, you know, do different kinds of games and stuff. But yeah, again, now that's a decision that felt wrong at the time of EA getting that exclusivity agreement. And the fact that it seems to be over now, that's a good thing.
You know what I want, Lucasfilm? I want another Republic Commando, Treyarch, or Activision. Actually, not Activision, I mean, like, or Infinity Ward. Actually, give me an Infinity Ward Republic Commando, please. Actually, if you guys can get me a high, like a HD remake of Republic Commando, I'd just be good with that. That game was so fucking good. Did you play Republic Commando, Nick?
I did not, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay. So yeah, I would be very happy with that. I'm glad that like you can actually get the best developer for the job now. And let's be honest, I mean, they're going to go with one of the three bigger publishers. They're going to go with either Activision, Ubisoft, or EA. Maybe Bethesda, you know? So we'll see. But right now it's just a rumor. We'll see if that actually comes true. If that's all true.
Watch the studio that's working on this is Vicarious Visions.
Oh, and it's my Republic remake. Yeah. Republic Commando remake. So next we also have, some speculation here that Naughty Dog's next game may be a new IP in a fantasy setting. And the reason why these speculations as in a fantasy setting is that one of Naughty Dog's senior concept artists, he posted three pieces of artwork, which he said was inspiration from a new game. And then he said, you know what I'm talking about. So the speculation is that Naughty Dog's next game or newest IP will be a fantasy game, which makes perfect sense to me because I believe that the PS4 generation would be the first generation that Naughty Dog has not made a new IP. Because with the PlayStation, you had Crash Bandicoot. With the PlayStation 2, you had Jak and Daxter. With the PlayStation 3, you had both Uncharted and The Last of Us. Both during the PlayStation 4 era, you had a new Uncharted, actually two new Uncharteds, and a Last of Us. Why there's no Jak and Daxter remake around, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Why are you disrespecting me like this, Sony, Naughty Dog? I don't know. We got Crash remake, but I think that's because they sold the rights, I guess, to Activision. Did Activision publish that in the first place? The original Crash Bandicoot?
I want to say yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. And maybe after that, that's when Sony bought them. Okay. So maybe, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense because like up until the PlayStation 4 era, Naughty Dog had a brand new IP. They had a brand new IP every generation. So it's time for them to have a new IP. And I get with the Naughty Dog methodology of how they make games, it's probably going to be a good one if you're into fantasy titles. You know, I think the Last of Us and Uncharted are a bit closer because of how, you know, their shooting mechanics and how they work. But still.
Are we sure that this is a new IP and it's not just like The Last of Us 3 is going to get really weird?
It could. I mean, I already sent over the story for The Last of Us 3, so you know what to do. All you got to do is pull that trigger. So, but yeah, I mean, it would be interesting if it's a fantasy game and, you know, then eventually maybe come back around for The Last of Us Part 3. I mean, The Last of Us, there was nothing wrong with The Last of Us Part 2. Nothing. I think maybe they could have made Abby's part DLC instead of roping it in a game, but they did that for a reason. That's just personal opinion, but ultimately it was a good game. It was one of the best games ever made. It still is. But you know, it gives a little time to breathe. Give people a chance to kind of calm down because there was a big hoopla about it, but for the wrong reasons. But they make this new IP, then maybe come back around to it. maybe the next game that gets retired is Uncharted. Maybe because, like, you know, we haven't seen a Jack and Daxter in over 10 years. So Jack and Daxter is retired as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, maybe it's time for Nathan Drake to retire too. And then right after that, it's, you know, The Last of Us. And then they could just push forward with these new IPs, you know? So we'll see. Finally here, we have Valve is working on more games. And this comes from TechSpot. Actually, I think there was a, it was the information they got was from the with the Final Hours book that Jeff Keighley put together on Half-Life Alyx. And Gabe says, you know, that Alyx was great. You know, it felt good to be back doing single player games, and it created a lot of momentum inside the company to do more of that. So Valve is apparently working on some new IP or working on some new games, but they've been really nondescript on what they're working on. So the reason I want to bring up the article is not because I want to talk about, well, what could they be working on? What's it going to be? Because Gabe had already said, you know, because people, he said that people have been asking him about a Portal 3. They've been asking him about Left 4 Dead 3. They've been asking about Half-Life 3. And he's given a bunch of non-answers about that. And he says, hopefully one day people will never ask him questions about it again. That tells me they have no desire to make those games. The thing I wanted to say is, like, that's the only thing I want from you. I personally am just not interested in new IP from Valve. And one of the reasons is that, you know, Valve has had I think Portal 2 came out in 2011. I believe it's 2011, maybe 2012. And that was the last, it wasn't new IP. That was the last, like, single player experience we got from Valve. And that was great, but they've had 9 years to deliver new IP, to try new things. And they just didn't. The only thing they pushed out is Half-Life Alyx. And they, in my opinion, I don't care what they say. In my opinion, the reason they did it is because they wanted to just push VR. They wanted to have a great VR title, because the thing about VR is that there are games out there, but nothing's really pushing the limits too much. It's not like, oh, there's no must-have VR title. If you have VR, then Half-Life Alyx is, okay, I gotta have this game. You know, but there's no hardware selling software. A Halo was a console seller. You know, God of War is a console seller. There's no hardware seller for VR. The price is just too prohibitive. It is. And for somebody to say, oh, well, it's much cheaper now. You can get a good headset for $400 on top of your $2,000 PC, or at the lowest $1,500 PC, on top of your $400 console, $500 console, another $400 for one peripheral, you know? That's like, no. Like, it's just too cost prohibitive, which is one of the reasons why Half-Life Alyx being VR only just kind of pissed me off. And then pissing me off even more is when people were talking about how it still played it safe with VR. I'm like, then just make it a regular fucking game. Like, you know, at that point. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to complain here a little bit, and you can take it how you want. But Half-Life Alyx was a big fuck you to me personally. You know, that people have been dying. Half-Life fans have been dying for Half-Life content since, you know, Half-Life 2, Episode 2. And you put it behind, you make it VR only, you know. Don't get me wrong, I'm just fucking around, and I don't really take it personally, but that's kind of the thought process behind it. It's like, wow, that really sucks. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to see new IP from Valve. At this point, I want more of the games that I loved. I would love for them to deliver a new Half-Life that I can play with a mouse and keyboard. I would love for them to deliver a new Portal. You know, one of my favorite things about Portal were the mods that came out for it. There were great Portal mods that didn't necessarily continue the story. One of the best ones I played had to be the paint mod, or the, I think it was just called paint mod. I forget what the actual title of it was, but it even had voice acting. Like, this mod had voice acting. It was called the Paint Gun Initiative. And instead of using a Portal gun, you used the paint gun for everything. And they introduced a new variant of the paint, you know? and it had its own story. You were your own person, and it had its own voice acting, and it was great just being in that world and dealing with those puzzles and, you know, things like that. And yeah, that's what I want more of. I mean, of course they're going to make what they're going to make, and they'll probably be good games. I didn't say I wasn't going to buy it. You know, I'll probably, if they're good games, I'm gonna buy it. But at the same time, it's just like, dude, I want more of the stuff that I love. That I, fuck, man, just finish the goddamn story. Finish the goddamn Half-Life story. Portal story, you can actually say is wrapped up. Between, yes, between the single player and the multiplayer, it wraps up the story. And you can kind of leave it alone. But Half-Life was such an important series for gaming. It changed the way video games are made. And if you're too young to understand why, go watch some YouTube videos on it. Like, you need to understand how games were made before Half-Life and how games were made after Half-Life. You really like Titanfall 2? Because Titanfall 2 is an amazing game. Think Half-Life. Okay? Like, you really need to, it is a huge deal what Half-Life did for game creation and stuff like that, or at least the development process for games. And you know, we were all in, man. We were all in with Half-Life, and especially Half-Life 2, and the fact that, oh, we're gonna release stuff in episodes so we can get stuff out faster. And you only had one more part to do, and you couldn't do it. Like, yeah, like that's rough. That's rough. Yeah.
It almost feels like somebody needs to look at why am I drawing a blank on the guy? Who's the guy that did Game of Thrones, that book series? What's his name?
R.R. Martin?
Yes, George R.R. Martin. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because he's got that one last book to write to wrap everything up. And I mean, the show addressed a lot of that, but who knows how the book's going to diverge. And like, right, he just can't get that out. And it's like, you know, Gabe just had one last chapter of Half-Life to put out, and they couldn't get that out. And I think there's something to be said for the creative writer's block that can hit when you've built up a franchise, and then I think on some level you realize you can't stick the landing, and like, what do you do?
Bro, because they had, like, the writer for Half-Life had the ending, because he told the ending to somebody. Like, he told the ending to, like, a publication years later.
Right. No, I remember I don't know if we were doing a podcast when that came out, but I do remember that article. But I think the thing is, though, clearly somebody at Valve didn't like that, or, you know, didn't feel like putting that out for whatever reason. And it's baffling, because, like, you could, you know, I don't want to say, like, even if you put out utter crap and slap the name Half-Life 3 on it, it would sell like hotcakes, but you could do that.
I think the ending would have been a bit unsatisfying, but perfect for Half-Life. It would have worked perfectly for Half-Life. So maybe that was part of the problem, but it definitely wouldn't have ended the series. Like, the way it would have ended actually would have left it open for another sequel starring another series starring Alex specifically.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I want from Valve. Like, they've had so much time. I remember, what was it, a couple years back? Was it a year or maybe 2 years when they said, oh, we have this big announcement for Dota, you know, at the Invitational. And they start the video for the announcement, and at the end when they reveal it's just a card game for Dota, everybody's like, oh. The crowd reaction was hilarious. I'm like, yeah, no. But yeah, they've been stuck in this, you know, Global Offensive came out in like 2011, 2012. Global Offensive, which is not new IP. That's fucking Counter-Strike redone again.
Right.
Well, what, the third time? Then they had Dota 2, which wasn't new IP, and they've just been riding on that. They rode on that for the entire last decade. You know?
I think the problem, as we talked about earlier, like, Valve's management structure is very informal, and I think to shepherd a new game takes leadership and determination and will. Making a game is hard.
Yeah.
It's difficult. You have to set your sight on the goal and work towards it. And it could just be that because of their leadership structure, there's no one there. Like, I'm sure there are people there that want to be like, oh, let's do this game. Let's do this game. But there's no one there to, with the actual collective oomph to get the company moving in a direction to release something. I mean, they put out the card game there. The card game, I mean, you know, not that it takes a small team, but that's a much different scale of project than, you know, a proper sequel to Half-Life or even the Half-Life VR game.
Right. So, Gabe, if you're listening to this, just know you broke my heart. You broke my heart. I mean, and then on top of that, it makes me almost not want to get invested in Valve games. That's what it kind of it feels like to a degree, is because, like, if they won't complete one of the best video game series of all time, why should I get invested in this other series that they're going to do? You know?
Well, the problem is that they make too much money through Steam, that they don't need to put out video games. And so what you need to do is look at your backlog and realize every game that is in your backlog that you have not played has contributed to the fact that they're not making Half-Life 3.
No, this isn't about me, Nick.
Okay. No, I mean, you personally, you've bought enough games in your backlog that they don't need to make Half-Life 3. You alone have funded them.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start closing up for the evening. I'd like to thank you guys for listening. Yeah, so coming up this week on Mash Those Buttons, we're going to have a new Clan of Three. I do know that for sure. A new Ready Room, Droppin' Spicy Ready Room, new Torn and Goblin this week. We're going to have a new Warcraft Reloaded, a new Double Tap for the FGC, a new Droppin' Spicy proper for Apex Legends. I believe a new Wondrous Tales as well, and a new Night City Stories. So check out those shows. Check out the Mash Those Buttons website. And, you know, you might be able to find another show that you enjoy. If this is the only one you listen to, more likely it's the other way around. Like, you listen to another show and you listen to the Mash Those Buttons show. But hey, if you found this show first of all, thank you very much. And second of all, go check out our other shows. All right. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork to keep up with what's going on with the Mash Those Buttons Network. And Nick, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on WoW Talk, where we talk about Warcraft Guild and news, and also on the Torn and the Goblin, where we talk about Warcraft story and lore. This week, we will be diving into the story of Ardenweald, so check that out.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Joshtradamus, and you can follow me on Twitch. I stream on this channel, on the Mash Those Buttons channel, so twitch.tv/MashTheButtons. I usually stream on Friday nights. We'd also love to have you join our Discord, like I said earlier, which is mash.gg/Discord, and you could join our community, talk about this show, talk about some of the other games that we play or that we have shows about, and, you know, meet up with the rest of our community. And I also encourage you guys to reach out to us with comments and questions, so you can reach out via Discord or Twitter, or just shoot an email to contact@mash.gg. And if you enjoy the show and you want to help us out, the best way to do that is to share the show with others. And also to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And if you want to take your support a bit further, you can do so on Patreon at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month, as well as gain early access to content and gain access to exclusive content. We also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And, you know, you can also throw a Twitch sub our way if you prefer to support that way. And with that, we are done. I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. Have a good night.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.